Welcome to the Church of England Weekly Podcast. In this week's edition, photographer Jim Grover speaks about his project spending a year following Clapham vicar, the Reverend Kit Gunasekara.
I was the classic Christmas Day churchgoer. You know, I had a very busy work life, used to run around the world a lot, so weekends were very precious. My faith in the church wasn't a big part of my life for a long time.
We hear from the Reverend Canon Dr. Sandra Miller about Godparents Sunday and how to get involved in celebrating it.
Every week we are still baptising over 2,000 children, which means every week we're seeing another 7,000 people becoming godparents. And it's such a special relationship. For many people it goes on not just for a year or two, but actually 20, 30, 40 years.
And Captain Stephen Ramshaw, Church Army Evangelist, talks about finding his vocation as we prepare to celebrate Vocation Sunday later in the month.
And he come knocking on the door, and it was like a snowy night, and I always remember the night, and I thought, who's that at the door? So I went, and there was our vicar, Andrew, standing at the door, all shivering, you know. So I said, oh, how are you in? What's the matter with you? And he's a quiet bloke, you know, and he's looking at us all sheepish. I thought, wait, how are you in? Spit it out. And he says, well, I've never said this to anyone before, but I feel God's calling you to be an evangelist with Church Army.
Of Things Not Seen is the first photo essay undertaken by Jim Grover and tells the story of a year of the Reverend Kit's ministry in and around Clapham. Jim started by explaining what it was like to follow Kit around for a whole year.
It was amazing for a variety of reasons. Firstly, of course, I learnt about, you know, what it takes to be a minister. And I find ministry now an inspiring thing. I think it's an amazing thing. That what I call the foot soldiers, you know, the local parish priests do in their communities day in, day out. I think it's a remarkable thing. You know, whilst at the top of the church, there are a whole series of very big issues being wrestled with, you know, out in the parishes, on the ground, ministers are just going about their days, you know, doing amazing things for the people who they connect with. So I learned about ministry. I met a lot of very interesting people, whether it be in their homes, people in their 80s or 90s who talked with, you know, with real enthusiasm about their lives in Clapham and how Clapham's evolved and their wartime experience. So I learned lots of, you know, things about my community. I learned about, you know, Kit's wonderful, you know, church congregation, who are a delightful group of people who I'd never met before. And as you also know, I learned a lot about myself. And through, you know, we had lots of just long conversations, Kit and I. Sometimes I'd go around the vicarage and I wouldn't take any pictures. We'd just talk and chat, and Kit would share with me how he thought about ministry and his beliefs, his faith. And we just talk. And as you know, as a result of that, you know, I completely sort of reconnected with my faith, with God, and have got, you know, wonderful benefits from, you know, reconnecting with my faith and becoming a regular churchgoer again, which was never expected, never intended, but has been a kind of wonderful outcome for me. So, you know, on so many fronts, I've had the most incredible experience. I've also, you know, witnessed some very intimate, you know, moving spiritual moments. I've seen faith writ large. I've been very, very fortunate. It's been an incredible experience. There have been a couple of times, you know, when I haven't photographed, but otherwise, you know, I've had such wonderfully free access to really take my camera wherever I wanted to take it. And that's as much due to Kit's kindness, but also the kindness of all of Kit's, you know, wonderful sort of parishioners. It's been an amazing experience. It really has.
What sort of churchgoer were you before this experience of shadowing Kit?
I was the classic Christmas Day churchgoer. I was brought up in a private school with a very strong kind of Church of England ethos. I was confirmed. Actually, my eldest son also confirmed. Was an occasional churchgoer in my early life. But, you know, I had a very busy work life. Used to run around the world a lot, so weekends were very precious. You know, family life, three young sons growing up in Clapham. You know, basically, you know, the church, you know, kind of wasn't a, my faith in the church wasn't a big part of my life for a long time. I wasn't a deliberate, move away from it. It just sort of, it took a back seat while other things were more important. And now that's obviously completely changed, because, I really love going to church, learning more about, kind of God, faith, spending time with kids, parishioners. My Sundays are now, completely changed from what they were before. Every Sunday you'll find me at church, and other times too. I'm on the PCC, so I'm completely now, recommitted to church, both as a sort of, as a churchgoer, as a believer with faith, as well as someone trying to help, if you like, as much as I can, kids' church on the sort of agenda items that many churches face, finances, funding, leaking roofs, all that good stuff. So it's a completely different world I find myself in now compared to what I was 18 months ago. And I love, where I am. I feel great about that, and feel very, very privileged, actually, to have discovered this, because otherwise I might not have done.
You've also won an award for your pictures of Kit, and you've exhibited them at the OXO Gallery in London, and they've been shown on websites, such as the Guardian website. Can you estimate how many people have seen this work?
Yes, very interesting, actually. Fascinating. One of my going-in intentions was to make this story as seen as it possibly could be. Because I said, look, I'm doing this, Kit, because I want to learn about your ministry, but I also want to bring your ministry to as much, kind of public attention as is possible. What do I know? First thing I know, 7,500 people came through the OXO Gallery over, 2.5 weeks, to see the exhibition. And for me, that's a wonderful outcome, because I know for certain that 7,500 people now know more about ministry than they knew before. And what was so kind of rewarding was the comments. I ordered a visitor's book. It quickly filled up with lovely comments. I'd order a second one. And so I've got this wonderful couple of visitor's books just filled of comments around how moving they found the story, how inspired they were and uplifted by the story. What a remarkable man Kit, clearly is based on the story I've told. And I've also had people talk about how it actually had them rethink their own relationship with, their faith, the church, because this is a very positive story, I think, about, the everyday life of the church, when actually, for most of when they think about the church, they think about, sort of not very uplifting headlines. And so, wonderfully gratifying response from people who attended it. Interestingly for me also, a lot of vicars and clergy attended. And, some incredibly moved, and I think so joyful that their lives and what they do every day, which is not typically recognized or known about, was kind of finally being brought into the public domain. I had one lady, literally on the day before we finished, saying, I think I'm going to burst into tears here. I'm so moved and so just joyful that you've shared this story. This is what I do every day. And even though my parish is not quite the same as Kit's, it is similar. What we do is the same. And I thought, wow, how wonderful to kind of give, if you like, energy to the clergy, from seeing this. And that was a completely unexpected kind of outcome. Beyond that, obviously it's been on a lot of websites, The Guardian, as you mentioned, but it's also been on various kind of quite widely distributed photography websites. It's been in various photography magazines. It's been in Southwest Resident magazine. It was on TV, on BBC Radio. So it has a lot of coverage. So I don't know, ultimately, how many people, have seen, if you like, the online or read online about the story. But I am so pleased that, those who have seen it have been so kind of, uplifted and have had such a kind of positive response to seeing, you know, how Kit brings his kind of inspirational ministry to bear on this community in such a wonderful way. And that to me is a wonderful outcome. It really is. It's been extraordinary, quite extraordinary. And I couldn't have asked for more. You know, already I've had requests, you know, to show it elsewhere, whether it be in offers in cathedrals or churches. And of course, at one level, I'd love this to be seen as widely as possible. So I think it's a story that should be, you know, seen and heard, because I think it's inspiring. I really do. So we'll see. But it has been very sort of well received, and I'm just so pleased about that.
For people who are listening who may not have seen your pictures, can you just give an idea of the range of pictures that there are there?
So firstly, on the website, which is ofthingsnotseen.com, ofthingsnotseen.com, you'll find 12 of the images of the 47 in total. And I think they give a good range. You know, so, you know, one's got pictures of Kit at his home in very private moments of prayer, of writing his daily journal. I've captured Kit out on the streets. I've captured Kit, you know, counseling, caring for, you know, looking after people in his sort of community. I've got pictures of Kit in people's homes, in care homes. I've got pictures of Kit in his church and all the things that happen in the church, you know, beyond the usual Sunday services. So it really kind of captures, if you like, I've sought to capture the breadth of what ministry involves.
And you can visit www.ofthingsnotseen.com to view the photographs Jim has taken and produced. The first ever Godparents Sunday is set to take place on the 1st of May, and we spoke to the Reverend Canon Dr. Sandra Miller about why churches are being encouraged to celebrate godparents.
Just a couple of weeks ago, in fact on Mothering Sunday, I was taking a great family service at a local church, and one of the things that really struck me as I left the church was the number of people, a couple of women, but also a couple of men as well, who said to me that not only were they thinking of their own children or grandchildren, but on this day, Mothering Sunday, they were thinking about their godchildren. And in particular, there was one woman stuck in my mind because she's a woman I know reasonably, and she herself has no children of her own. And for her, Mothering Sunday had this sense of thinking also about those other children whose lives she had been involved with. And it struck me yet again how very important for so many people godparents are in their lives. And that's why, as the Church of England, we've decided that we really want to try and reclaim that relationship and set it apart as something very special. Every week we are still baptising over 2,000 children, which means every week we're seeing another 6,000-7,000 people becoming godparents, and it's such a special relationship. For many people it goes on not just for a year or two, but actually 20, 30, 40 years. Only yesterday I met someone who was telling me about having been at their goddaughter's wedding in South America over the weekend. So it's a huge, long-living relationship that we want to celebrate.
So why are churches being asked to specifically celebrate Godparents Sunday on the 1st of May?
As the Archbishop's Council have recently done some research about what really matters to parents around the whole event of having a child baptised. And one of the things that emerged very, very strongly was that godparents are enormously important. And of course, in the baptism service, godparents do make some very big promises to pray, to support, to be an example for the child, and to lead them and bring them back into church and into the Christian faith. And it seems to us that it would be a really good thing to do to have a Sunday where we focused on that relationship and supported people in their role as godparents, encouraged those who are godchildren perhaps to be in touch and to value their godparents, and perhaps also to invite families back to church for that Sunday to bring their godparents along with them.
And how can churches go about making this a really special day for the godparents, for the godchildren and for the wider families?
Well, we have a website called Church Support Hub, and on that we've put as a download a whole lot of different things. We have a download which is called 25 or plus ideas for things to do around Godparents Sunday. We have a specially written service that people can use. But even if people don't go and invite, you know, a whole lot of new families back or recent contacts back, even if just on that Sunday, in the prayers, we stopped and had a focus on those who are already in our congregations, who are both godparents and God's children. That would be a great thing to do, to flag up that relationship and honour it and to pray for it, and that it would be a strong and good relationship over the years ahead. And ideas for that, for simply praying on that day, are also available on the website. So it could be a big event with special invitations, or it could just be a focus on prayer, which is so important.
You mentioned the website there. What's the web address where people can go to find out more about Godparents Sunday?
They can go and find out more about Godparents Sunday at www.churchsupporthub.org. And on there, that will lead them to where they can get specially made resources, including we have some lovely little pin badges that say on them, Blessed God Child is one of them, and the other one says Loving Godparent. They're really nice, and I think many churches would like to have those to be able to give to those who are both God children and godparents to celebrate that special relationship.
Finally this week, Captain Stephen Ramshaw, who works as a Church Army evangelist based in North Tyneside, speaks about his journey to discovering his vocation. He starts by talking about how he came to faith through Alpha.
Well, when I first became a Christian, that was back in 1998, and I went along to an Alpha meeting because my mum had asked us to go along. I mean, I'd had nothing to do with Christianity. I knew nothing about it, really. And there, she asked us to go along, and I didn't want to go, but my wife was keen to go. And so by the first one, I was working away down in Leeds, and so I thought, well, I've got an excuse not to go. Then my mum got my sister to phone us up, so I thought, well, it must be important, so I'll go along. But I was going to go along and tell them all what I thought about them, you know, because I thought it was all just stupidness, and I had no time for the church. I was a bit angry about it, really. And so I went in with, like, steam coming out my ears. But the people were that lovely and that nice, I just took to them, you know. And then for the first time ever in my whole life, they explained Jesus to us. And I just thought, wow, why has no one told me this before? You know, and I just couldn't get over it. And I says, run that by me once more. I says, what you're telling me is the creator of all this, the whole universe, the stars, heavens, everything, me, everything, come down here and was prepared to die for me. And I just found that totally overwhelming. And then I didn't change completely overnight, but I worked on the buildings and I went into work the next year. Well, I mean, I used to have the foulest mouth ever. I mean, I would break up a word to put a profanity in. And I went into the beard cabin the next morning, and I'd hear all the, you know, the lads just talking normally, using all the swearing and that. And it just seemed like you could cut it with a knife. It seemed like a thick fog. And I stopped swearing then. I've never sworn since. And it was strange. I had to learn to speak all over again. I couldn't express myself, you know, without using a profanity. So it was just this real strange feeling. Well, I just started feeling more and more compassion, you know, for people and for the love of people. And I looked about and I just thought, these need to know about Jesus. Why is no one telling them about it? You know, and I'd look and I'd see in people's lives that there was something missing from them. And I just got a real sense of love for people. I mean, I used to be pretty heartless at one point, you know, and I couldn't care. I was totally selfish. And it just started to change. I started to, like, fill up with tears when I looked at people and their lives and the struggles they were going through in their life, and I just wanted to change it for them. I wanted people to have better and not to, you know, just to live the doldrum lives and the drunkenness and just things that were going on in people's lives. I just wanted to change that for them.
Was that the beginning of your calling to a vocation as an evangelist?
Well, I don't think it was, because, I mean, I finished the Alpha course, and then I, like they said, because it wasn't a different church to where I lived, and asked us to see if you'll have to go out and find a church a bit nearer home. And I thought, ah. So I went, and I mean, it was an Anglican church where I went to do the Alpha, but I didn't really have any feeling towards the Anglican church, and I went to the Pentecostal church first. And then my wife says, no, we're going to the church on the hill, the Anglican church. And I walked in then, and I just felt like, oh, what have I come to here? But I just fell in love with the place and the people, and the vicar there was brilliant. Then I just started realising that in there, it was all well sorted. It seemed to me the church was running along really well, and I loved the place, but the people outside the church, I started feeling, needed to know more. You know, we were well enough sorted, it seemed, in the church. I was more concerned about those outside the church, you know, and telling them. And that's when I started feeling the calling to be an evangelist. And I did, like, baptism visits for the church, and I started going out and talking to people about Jesus and baptism, and that was when I started feeling the calling.
In the blog you wrote for the Church of England, you gave a quite striking story about how your vicar came to see you.
Oh, yeah, well, it was a new vicar. He come to see us, and he come knocking on the door, and it was like a snowy night, and I always remember the night, and I thought, who's that at the door? So I went, and there was our vicar, Andrew, standing at the door, all shivering, you know. So I said, oh, how are you in? What's the matter with you? He's a quiet bloke, you know, and he's looking at us all sheepish. I thought, wait, how are you? Spit it out. And he says, well, I've never said this to anyone before, but I feel God's calling you to be an evangelist with Church Army. I thought, is he? I says, why hasn't he told me this then? And he says, well, think about it and pray about it and see where it goes. So I did. I spent a lot of time thinking about it and praying about it. And then he, like, arranged for, like, just to get an application form. And then the application form come. Well, I mean, I'd worked on the building sites for 30 years. You know, I'd never filled an application form in since I was about, 16 when I first left school. And I didn't have any idea how to fill an application form in. And it took us 2 weeks just to get through the application form. Oh, it was on about timelines and this, that and the other. I just thought, wow, this is above my head. So I sat there and I started, and my wife Lynn said, "Well, start with your name, put your name on." And I just went through it like that. And then they sent someone to see us, and I had to go on one of the panels, a selection panel down in London. And I failed miserably at that at first because I had to do a presentation. Well, I'd never done a presentation or anything in my life, and I got there, and there was other candidates, and they had PowerPoint presentations and things, and I thought, wait, I've got a scrap of paper with a few words on. And then I went in and sat on the panel, were all sitting there looking at us, and I had my little bits of paper, but I'd forgot my glasses, so I couldn't see them, and I got in the right old twist. And then Mark Russell just, like, stopped it and said, just started asking us questions, and then that's when I just sort of turned it around a bit, and I got through it. Thanks be to God.
You've since done 4 years training, and you're now a Church Army evangelist.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about your work?
My work? Yeah. Well, I work down in Willerton Quay, which is a pretty... Well, I mean, it's got all the statistics to that. I can tell you the statistics. It says, nationally, Willerton Quay is among the lowest 7% of deprived places, with poor scores for measures of income, employment, health and disability. In education, skills and training, the scores in the district are among the worst 13% nationally. And amenities have gradually disappeared or been run down. So that's the statistics for you, but that doesn't mention anything about people, you know. I mean, everyone here is flesh and blood and got a story to tell and got needs and cares. And I work in this place, and it's a church. Well, it's now a Chapel of Ease, that's its title now, and it's where St. Paul's Community Partnership is. So we're under no obligation to put on regular worship. And so it's like the only centre of the community that's here, and we've got various groups use it, you know, and I just lead that up, and what can I say, it's just a brilliant place to be. We come down to London in November because we won a national award, the Talk Talk Digital Heroes Award, for the work we do with the unemployed. And so we come down to the House of Lords on the 5th of November. So I was down in Westminster then. We've just started to air a community garden, you know, which is fantastic. That's coming along great. And God just seems to be blessing the work here, you know, and I'm just involved with the whole of the community. I go in the local primary school for a half a day a week on a Thursday. That's how I was about this morning when you phoned us, because it's half term. And so I had a few hours on a Thursday morning. Well, we're usually in the school. And we're having a big street party on June the 10th for the Queen's 90th birthday, which the school's coming down to. All the school kids are coming down, and it's just going to be a time for the community to get together.
Did you feel, when, in terms of your vocation to be an evangelist, was that something that suddenly happened, or was it gradual?
I knew I was being called to something, or I know now it was a calling, you know, and I just, and it was like a bit gradual, and I didn't know what I was being called to, but I just knew I wanted to serve God, and I wanted to be out there with the people. I mean, like I said in the blog, I'm just an ordinary bloke. I mean, I was brought up on a council estate. I lived on a council estate when I come to faith, you know, and I live down in the estate now with the people down here, and I worked on the building sites, and I just felt that there wasn't been enough done to tell these people about Jesus and to help them, you know. So it was, it just fills my belly with, like I said, a fire and a passion just to reach out and tell them and to do my best I can for them.
Vocation Sunday is being celebrated on the 17th of April this year. To find out more and hear about others' stories, make sure you're following at C of E Calling on Twitter. That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at C_of_E and like our Facebook page to stay up to date with news during the week. Thanks for listening.